Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today we are here to talk about allegations of fraud involving the developer of the Ocotillo Wind Project. My very special guest today is an attorney, Bill Pate. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before this project was built, Bill was one of the very first ones sounding the alarm, saying there were all kinds of red flags to believe this project was not going to produce anywhere near the power that was predicted. Now, he's not the only one saying that. We have an aerospace engineer out there, Jim Pelly, who said the same thing. And then we have an international wind expert named Nicholas Bocard in Europe, in Spain, well-known expert who's published information about questions about capacity factors claimed by the wind developers across Europe, many of whom produced only a fraction of the power that they promised. So he did a study before Ocotillo ever turned on its first wind turbine out there, and he predicted this project was not ever going to reach the 34% or so capacity factor that Pattern Energy promised the federal government when it pocketed lucrative tax subsidies to build this project. The Bocard report was commissioned by the Desert Protective Council. However, the findings and the data and the results have been confirmed by other experts, including a UC Berkeley expert, who also said that anything producing under a 30% wind capacity is just not viable, essentially. And in fact, at year's end, we finally have the results back. It took a few months to get these. It was sort of like pulling teeth from the federal government, but we finally got our hands on them. And in fact, it produced during the first year 15.7% capacity factor, way less than half what it expected. And in fact, there was a blade that fell off when they actually did have wind, when it actually got up to 19 miles an hour or so one day. They had a multi-ton blade fall off on a public trail out there, so that shut the project down for a few weeks. But even if we account for that, we asked multiple experts, and they all came up with the conclusion that even in a future year, if you didn't have a blade fall off, it's still only going to produce 18 to 20%, maybe 20% if they're really lucky, nowhere close to 35. The actual generation for last year was 334 gigawatts. Pattern Energy told the North American Development Bank, who partly funded this project, it would produce 646 gigawatts, about twice as much. Oh, and SDG&E, well, they thought it was going to produce even more. They told the California Public Utilities Commission it would generate 891 gigawatts, almost 900, and it only came in at 334. So the big question is why? So, Bill, can you explain to us, before this thing was built, what were the clues that made you believe there was not enough wind to be a viable wind project?
Well, I'm now 44 years old, Miriam, and my family has had a place in beautiful Ocotillo since the early 1980s. So for the past 30 years, I've gotten to know the weather patterns down there pretty well. And you don't see a lot of wind farms in the desert, and there's a reason, and that is the winds are incredibly seasonal. And you begin to learn that the winds blow in the springtime, and after the spring, the high pressure sets in, and there's very little wind for most months out of the year. They only get wind for maybe a 2 or 3 month period of time. And so I began to question, why are they putting a wind farm down in a hole at only 200 feet of elevation? And I didn't know anything about wind farms, so I started reading about them. Jim Pelly, like you said, is an aerospace engineer. We would have conversations, and we learned that it takes an incredible amount of wind to turn these massive wind turbines. And if you do not have prevailing winds, constant wind of between, let's say, 15 and 25 miles an hour, We're not talking about occasional wind gusts. We're talking off the coast of Ireland in the middle of Mongolia type winds of 15 to 25 miles an hour. You will not make anywhere near the power that these companies try to claim these wind turbines make.
Right. The report that Bocard wrote, which, by the way, was embargoed for publication till after the first year of wind data was out, and we're the first ones in the world to publish this report. You can find it on eastcountymagazine.org in our Green Living section. But after he was shown the results, Bocard's comment was, "Told you so. I believe we have a clear case for the False Claims Act." He suggests that the U.S. government has grounds to sue Pattern Energy. Now, I have to say, we tried very, very hard to get comment out of Pattern. We contacted them repeatedly. I even went to their website thinking maybe their media relations guys changed, maybe there's a new one. I went there, I found on their investor relations site, the same day I looked, there was a press release dated the day before that had all his contact info on there. So it was current. They just chose to ignore this. Even when we told them we had serious allegations alleging fraud, they didn't respond, which I find very strange. Don't you?
I do indeed. There's been a number of tough questions that have been asked, and we've received very little answers. For example, the Bureau of Land Management, who approved this project, supposedly they were provided with some wind data from actual meteorological towers that were placed down on the desert floor where the project is located. And those towers have been out there for almost 3 years. They were out there for several years before the project was built.
How many months of data did Pattern Energy submit to the federal government for its application for all those tax subsidies?
Well, that's just it. With the measuring equipment out there for over 3 years, Pattern supplied less than one full year of data to the BLM. They claim, "We have never seen the data. We have asked for it." And some of us believe that it's certainly possible that Pattern submitted some of the best months of wind information instead of providing the whole picture and providing all of the wind data to demonstrate that the area does not have the wind resources for a viable wind farm.
So they may have cherry-picked which months to submit. Obviously, they didn't submit them all, or only about a third of them or less. Now, as far as where the towers were located, Pattern, in its application to the North American Development Bank for some of that funding, talked about what great wind resources there were. And in other places, they've talked about how windy it is up on those ridges around Ocotillo. How many turbines were built on ridges, Bill?
There weren't any wind turbines built in higher elevations.
Not one. They're all in the flat desert sand.
Right. They're all down in what's called the Yuha Basin, which is surrounded by mountains on three sides, and the prevailing winds out of the southwest and west are literally blocked by the mountains. But they did put one meteorological tower, the testing tower, at a little bit of a higher elevation. And according to our experts, that's very unusual to put a test instrument in some place other than where you're going to put the actual turbines.
So do we know which testing tower data they gave the federal government? Is it possible that they gave them data from the one up high and not the data from all the other ones that were down on the flatlands?
As we've learned with this project, nothing would surprise us at this point. And it would be nice if the federal government would simply turn over the data that it received, that it claims it received during the environmental review process.
Yeah, now many people have tried to get at this data. I know you've done FOIA requests, Freedom of Information Act requests, and they've just refused to turn it over. They say this is proprietary data. The company can keep this a big fat secret, so listeners, you and I don't have any right, no right at all, to know whether or not the wind measurements even showed wind. We don't know whether the federal government had data that showed it didn't and approved it anyway, or whether Pattern gave them data that made it look like there was wind, and if so, which data that was.
That's
were these
right.
consecutive months? How many towers?
It's pretty incredible to me that someone can claim that they literally own the air we breathe in terms of the wind. I mean, it's analogous to if you were going to build a dam to create hydraulic power, that you weren't somehow obligated to disclose how much water was coming down the river before you built the dam. And that's the position that they've taken, as though the wind and how fast it moves through the atmosphere is somehow proprietary.
Now, this gets even more amazing. We know that the predecessor for Pattern Energy, their parent company's predecessor, is the same company that built the Kumeyaay Wind Farm in Campbell. Now, that one, according to the federal government's data, actually did hit a 34% capacity factor. Same approximate capacity factor that Pattern claimed it was going to hit out there in Ocotillo. But it's at about a 3,000-foot higher elevation, just a few miles, but 3,000 feet higher in elevation. So, Bill, you actually took a look at some maps. The federal government has some maps that have actually done very thorough analysis of wind mapping resources across the entire country. What do the federal government's maps show for Ocotillo?
Well, the Kumeyaay Wind Farm is actually up right at the Tecate Divide, where the desert and the forest actually come together at about 4,300 feet of elevation. And as everyone knows, the elevation changes quite dramatically down Mountain Springs Grade,
which is pretty close to sea level when you get down there
right.
in Ocotillo.
And we have seen some maps that have very limited information, and it's almost a map of the entire state of California to try and pinpoint a very small 8-square-mile area in Ocotillo.
Let's backtrack a little bit. The actual federal maps, the legitimate maps that the government has done, showed Ocotillo as being only about approximately class 2 wind resource area. They rank wind resources on a 1 to 7. And to be considered a viable project, it has to be what, about a class?
There was a programmatic study for the 11 western states, and they said that at a minimum, you should have a class 4 wind. They did say with technology developments in the next few years, a class 3 might be considered a potential candidate for a wind farm. But again, those are marginal. Ocotillo is in the poor to marginal range.
Poor to low end of marginal.
Right. It's at the bottom of the power curve.
So, you overlaid the map that Pattern submitted to the North American Development Bank with the actual maps the federal government has done. And what did you discover?
Well, I discovered that Pattern intentionally omitted some critical longitude degrees. And if you look at the actual map that has some topographical information and some degrees listed on it, that the wind farm is entirely to the east of the good winds that are to the west.
So what you're saying is they changed latitude or longitude lines to make it appear that the wind farm was actually going to be at a place that has a 3,000-foot higher elevation than where they really built it?
Well, there was one overlay map Jim Pelley and I worked on where you could make an argument that they misrepresented the location of the town of Ocotillo relative to the wind resources. But the bottom line is if you put the GPS coordinates down on paper and put those coordinates on the wind resource maps that the National Renewable Energy Laboratory has created, Ocotillo is not in the area that has the required wind resources.
And yet, in all of its applications, Pattern repeatedly said that this is an area with strong winds, excellent wind
right.
resources. How could you call something that's a class 2 excellent or strong wind resources?
Well, for example, with the North American Development Bank, they actually use the term excellent, which is a term of art in the wind industry, for a class 5, 6, or 7 wind on a scale of 1 to 7.
So the question, I know we've talked with John Kennedy, a consultant that was hired by some of the residents out there and the tribes that were upset about this, and he said he went to elected official after elected official, Chairman Pico, with Viejas, was in some of these meetings with some of these high-level officials. He says the question they asked over and over was, how are you going to get better than average capacity factor equal to the strongest, most windiest wind farms on Earth with a far below average wind speed?
That's right. I had the privilege of meeting with Congressman Issa, Congressman Vargas, the former Congressman Filner.
Yeah, now let's stop a minute on Filner.
Yes.
Congressman Filner, before he left office to become mayor and go on to other problems, he was the only one that actually sent a letter to the Treasury Secretary. He sent a letter to the Secretary of the Treasury, and he said there were some very serious questions that had been raised about the wind speeds. And this was right after the whole Solyndra controversy over a green energy project funded that went under. and he handwrote in the margin, "This could be a major embarrassment to the administration," because he knew this project didn't have wind or that there was serious reason to doubt it. He then went on to ask them to withhold the funds from this project, from this developer, pending an investigation, which Treasury wrote back and said, yeah, we'll look into it, but routinely as we would for anybody that applies. Well, we did a FOIA request of our own, and we asked the Treasury Department to show us the results of that investigation. It took a long time. They sent back many hundreds of pages that were almost entirely blacked out in all the areas where you would want to know anything, like what the wind data showed, and they withheld over another 1,000 pages. So just what is it they don't want us to know? I get they have to withhold privacy data and, you know, people's signatures and things, but come on. If you could see the blacked out. So they don't want us to know. So the bottom line is we really don't know if they investigated anything at all.
Yep.
Okay. We're going to pause just a moment for a station identification, and we'll be right back with Attorney Bill Pate talking about allegations of fraud at the Ocotillo Wind Farm.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Now, we're back with Attorney Bill Pate discussing the efforts of himself and residents of Ocotillo to get the attention of their public officials with the information they'd gathered, strongly suggesting that the developer at Ocotillo Wind, Pattern Energy, inflated wind speed claims in order to pocket lucrative federal subsidies at the Ocotillo Wind Farm. Let's go to Congressman Issa next. Tell me how many times you guys met with him, and what did Congressman Issa promise to do months before this project was built?
He promised that he would try and get answers to some of the hard questions and to get his hands on some of the proprietary data, which he could do through his subpoena power.
Yeah, he chairs the House Oversight Committee that has the power to look into pretty much anything like this.
Right. And now that the data is actually out, now that we have one full year of data, we are no longer in a world of guesswork. We have the actual information, the data that this wind farm is producing far less than what was promised.
The sad thing is that Congressman Issa had that information. He had the book card report. He had the predictions that this was going to be a fraud. He had all the information you guys had given him showing that there was really no evidence to suggest that it was going to be successful. We've never been able to find one shred, and I don't think you have either, not one bit of wind data, not one thing anywhere to suggest that this would ever be a viable project. And you asked him to stop the project. He asked for more evidence. You guys brought him mountains of it. Now, we have repeatedly, over several months now, asked Congressman Issa, his office, numerous members of his staff, what he's done. What did he do with this data? Where is the investigation? What action, if any, has he taken? And why did he allow the project to be built and sit on this data suggesting it was a fraud? And we have received no answer at all. Now, we don't know why Congressman Issa wouldn't answer our questions or get back to the people of Ocotillo who have been seeking answers to these very serious questions. We can tell you, however, that we looked up his financial contributions and that Congressman Issa has taken very, very large donations from energy companies and companies that profit off the wind industry. And did he do anything at all, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge. He's been busy with Benghazi and some of the other issues, which is understandable. But now that we have the data, we hope that somebody such as Congressman Issa or Vargas or Peters or anybody else in the area could come forward. And all we're asking for are some answers to some tough questions. Show us the actual data from the meteorological towers that are on the ground. Now, it's as simple as that.
Congressman Vargas, Juan Vargas, who's new, he replaced Filner. So he came into this when the project was already, I think, pretty close to being built. And he didn't do anything initially either, but to his credit, after looking at this data, he was the one, by the way, that helped you guys get the actual wind data from FERC that they were withholding, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that helped us obtain these numbers that were being withheld. Once his office saw them, they contacted us and they said, "We take allegations of fraud very seriously, and we are asking the Department of Energy to look into whether fraud occurred here." That was 2 months ago, and we haven't heard anything back. They promised to let us know when they had the results, and we're still waiting at this point. So where does that leave us? Bill, what do the people out in Ocotillo believe would be the proper remedy to this situation? And we should note, by the way, that questions over the wind speeds are not the only issue with this project. It's had a blade fall off. It has desecrated Native American graves. The Native American Heritage Commission told the federal government basically what part of sacred graveyard for 10,000 years, sacred burial grounds for 10,000 years, didn't you get when you put this project on land that was supposed to be protected for Native Americans? Many environmentalists have voiced concerns. Many people within the Anza Borrego Desert State Park Service have voiced concerns. The retired superintendent was very alarmed about the impacts on wildlife. And, you know, then they built it right on top of an active earthquake fault or within feet of it. And we've yet to find out that there was any adequate seismic engineering done either. So what, in your opinion, should be done at this point to hold this company accountable?
Well, I believe that if representations that were ultimately untrue were made to the approval bodies to obtain public property. Now, remember, this is a private company that was granted over 10,000 acres of public land.
And millions of dollars in subsidies. We don't know exactly what this company got, but the IRS has come out and said that a number of these companies have been found to be double-dipping, taking illegally both subsidies, wind production tax subsidies, and stimulus money. We're sure they got at least one. We don't know if they got both of those, but this is millions of dollars. It's a lot of money per turbine, and it continues for every year into existence.
Yes.
For 20 or 30 years that these things are still standing. So what do you think the right remedy
is for the Bureau of Land Management to step up and take a hard look as to whether or not Pattern Energy is entitled to remain in possession of a right-of-way grant to use this land. And to do so, they have to demonstrate that they're complying with certain laws and that the project is creating the public benefit that they promised when it comes to renewable energy. And I think if you take a hard look at wind turbines and this project in particular, you will find that the public benefit is actually negative, that the public is actually, it's to the public's detriment that this project has been built. Because
now, I have to counter that with the argument that we always hear put forward in favor of why these wind turbines projects need to be built and fast-tracked and put all over the place on federal lands. I think 20 million acres of federal lands targeted for it, last I heard, is because of the serious threat of climate change. There's a new report out just this week from the White House on how serious this threat is on a global basis. So what would your response be to that, Bill?
I'm all in favor of environmental protections and things of that nature, but
so you favor things like rooftop solar or other approaches to,
of course,
reduce climate.
I think somebody needs to take a hard look at the actual science and the actual physics behind wind turbines, and they will conclude that wind turbines are not the solution. They are part of the problem. Wind turbines lead to the construction of more gas-fired power plants, not less.
We don't know how much fossil fuel is used to produce these. We do know that many wind turbines are built in coal-fired power plants, that they are shipped sometimes around the world by ship or at least across the country by train. And once they arrive on site, it takes 10 trucks for every turbine just to get the turbine parts for one turbine to the site. We know. Our reporter stood there and counted them. We know that it takes money to bulldoze, to grade the site, to blow up things that are in the way in cases of mountain areas like Tule Wind that's slated next here in McCain Valley. We know that it takes even more power to build substations and power lines for each one of these plants. So we really don't know if they're using more power than they produce in the case of a very marginal project to begin with like Ocotillo. But then the icing on the cake is the wind industry tells us, you know, the wind doesn't blow all the time. Of course, in Ocotillo, that's almost all the time. So we have to build a gas-powered, fossil fuel-powered peaker power plant as backup for when the wind doesn't blow. In the case of our area, SDG&E has been pushing to put one into an area next to Mission Trails Regional Park, another very beautiful area. And guess who owns that quail brush the company Cogentrix trying to build the Quail Brush gas-fired power plant as backup for Ocotillo. Guess who it is?
Sempra Energy.
Nope, actually, Sempra's for it. The owner is the Carlyle Group. Guess who owns Pattern Energy, who founded Pattern Energy?
The same company.
The Carlyle Group, that's right. So, back to the Ocotillo wind facility. So, even if it never produces any power, the Carlyle Group can make money if that gas-powered power plant gets built and they're using lots and lots of fossil fuel pumping it out into the air there right here in San Diego.
That's right. And you'll find that wind energy is the most unreliable, inefficient source of energy, and the numbers that these companies provide to public officials to try and sell this wind turbine as a good thing are based on almost hurricane winds. Winds of in excess of 23 to 25 miles an hour, which simply don't exist in most regions. I mean, San Diego, for one, is not that windy of an area. And the amount of power that is generated by these wind turbines in comparison to the destruction of all this land, the maintenance nightmares, etc., is negligible. I mean, the wind industry, all they want to talk about is the number of homes that these wind turbines will supposedly power.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that, Bill, because when our photographers were out there photographing the Pattern Energy wind farm manager giving a tour of the facility, and somebody on the tour asked him how many homes this would power, he gave an answer that, if true, would be about a tenth of the number that Pattern Energy told the federal government. And when he found out that this was on video and that our photographers had posted it online, instead of saying, gee, you know, let me add some corrective information here or something, I misspoke or whatever, which he later claimed weeks later was what happened, he physically assaulted one of the photographers. He made violent threats against both of them. Let's just say it was so profane, I can't say what he said on the air here. He followed one of them out into the desert, reached through, tried to grab the camera, which my photographer managed to turn on and catch it in the struggle as he was threatening to kick a profane word hole in his throat. Two photographers wound up with restraining orders against this charming gentleman who was ordered to turn in his guns. And Pattern Energy kept him on the payroll while all this was going on. So that's, I think that speaks volumes about the corporate ethics. But why was this man so determined not to have something about the wind speed? I mean, if there was no problem and it was really windy and it was going to produce all that power, I don't know. You think maybe we hit an Achilles heel there?
Oh, I think definitely.
Struck a nerve,
this is
rather?
Such a great project. Why all the secrecy? Why all the cover-up? Why do we have so many people who were originally involved with the Bureau of Land Management who no longer work in the El Centro field office?
Yeah, because the other troubling question this raises with all this secrecy is, what if officials in our government, perhaps in the Bureau of Land Management, other agencies, knew that there was good reason to believe this project would not produce enough wind and covered it up and approved this project anyway? Where's the accountability for those who approved this project and gave them taxpayer money?
There are so many questions that need answers, and we need somebody to come forward and get those answers so that the rest of our backcountry isn't destroyed for generations to come to achieve virtually nothing, to achieve a negligible amount of power.
But instead of fire danger in the case of the backcountry, listeners, so you know, the one coming in next is Iberdrola. Another whole show we got to do on that one, but they said this thing wouldn't be a fire hazard, even though each one has hundreds of gallons of flammable lubricating oil in it. But we found out that, in fact, they've had a number of them explode and catch fire. Gamesa, which they own a majority interest in that makes these turbines, has been sued in about five different places for causing fires. And yet our supervisors don't want to undo the vote. The federal government hasn't agreed to undo the approval for this project. It's so bad that in another state, there's a state fire marshal looking at shutting them down because Iberdrola lied in his words and did not even have the fire inspections done that they were supposed to and didn't do the things they were supposed to do as mitigation for fire. And out here, they say this is a severe and unmitigatable fire hazard in McCain Valley. So enough on that for now, but keep that in mind. Now, if this thing in Ocotillo turns out that it's really not producing anywhere near the power for years and years and years to come, what does that mean for ratepayers at SDG&E? You know, are we going to be paying for this? Well, we did ask Jennifer Ramp at SDG&E, and she told us SDG&E only pays a developer for the amount of energy actually produced. In the event that the amount of energy falls short of initial expectations in any year, then SDG&E's customers are protected. What do you think about that, Bill?
I'm not sure I believe it. Another thing as far as the cover-up is if you request a copy of the power purchase agreement between the developer and SDG&E, you will find, again, a whole bunch of black ink that has redacted page after page after page of that agreement. Supposedly, the agreement, which is unbelievable to me, is allowed to be kept under lock and key and secret for 3 years following approval of the project.
Wow. So until the statute of limitations for suing over things is passed.
But what we do know that SDG&E is paying well above market for this power.
And I believe some of it's going out of state. It's not even staying here. It wasn't even needed here, apparently, I've heard.
And they also will pay for the power and ratepayer recovery items associated with the construction of all the peaker plants that are necessary for these wind farms. Well, there's no proof that a wind farm has ever caused fossil fuel reduction.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, the other interesting thing is that even if ratepayers aren't technically paying for power that's not being produced out there, if it turns out that thing's a lemon and it's not doing what it was supposed to do, where's that power going to come from if we need it at all? Well, I think that if SDG&E goes forward and says, oh, we need more projects to make up for that one, then ratepayers can be charged back for this construction costs of the new projects. So actually, in the end, yes, the ratepayers could be left footing at least some of that bill.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out how SDG&E makes money, which is to come up with ways to ask permission to raise rates through what's called ratepayer recovery. And as this project continues to fail, ultimately the ratepayers or the taxpayers will bear the burden of this failed development.
Now, there is a new coalition that has formed, and it's a coalition that includes residents in Ocotillo, as well as tribal leaders, tribal members, and environmentalists out there. And the coalition is called Decommission Ocotillo Wind Now, or DOWN, as in tear the turbines down. Bill, do you believe that the project should be decommissioned and torn down to set an example?
I just believe the BLM, for a change, should follow the law. And by following the law, they would take a close look at what the legitimate public interest is that's being served by this project. And there isn't any, especially when the project is not hitting anywhere close to what was promised before it was built. And on that basis, the BLM can and should revoke the right-of-way grant to Pattern Energy.
Another reform that could be done is to get rid of some of the secrecy and require that wind speed data be a public record. Why on earth, when we're all paying for this project, should that be kept a secret is a question I keep hearing over and over and over again. If projects are viable, it seems to me the data to prove it should be publicly available to everyone.
Right. I think data concerning our natural resources should in no way be proprietary. No one should own the wind we breathe. No one should own how fast that wind travels through the atmosphere just because they happen to have measured it. Just like no one should own other information about our natural resources. Those natural resources belong to the public. And if they're being misused and people are trying to misconstrue how much wind there is in Ocotillo or in other parts of the country, study of the 11 western states showed that only about less than 1% of all of California was suitable for wind energy development.
Well, it does raise a question of, is this problem that you guys have exposed the tip of a very large iceberg, potentially? The Bocard report that we've alluded to, before he did the study on Ocotillo, he did a study on wind production across Europe, and in fact, he found a lot of inflated claims there that the average for all of Europe, or the countries that he looked at least, where a lot of these big wind projects were, for the capacity factor was far, far, far below what the industry had claimed overall. I know we've spot checked a couple in other places that were built recently, and we found some others that are far, far below what was promised. So why is taxpayer money being spent, in this case, to destroy public land for a wind project without wind?
It's an incredible question. And you know, the lack of engineering that went into this project, people should just drive out there and see it. I mean, when you see it, seeing is believing. It's only 75 miles east of San Diego, right at the bottom of the grade, and you will find over 42 miles of graded road, and some of those roads are the size of freeways through areas that were previously undisturbed, releasing all of that carbon that the desert is designed to absorb.
100-year-old groves of ocotillos that were mowed down for this project. The restoration has been almost non-existent. When we go out there, we found like dead sticks of old ocotillos.
It's
stuck
laughable.
In the ground.
It's completely laughable.
So, Bill, what are your final closing thoughts? I'll let you have the final word today on this issue.
Well, thanks again, Miriam, for having me on. I really appreciate it. I think we just keep doing what I believe in, which is that this project is ultimately going to fail. And I think it will come down as a classic example. How long it takes, if it takes 2, 3 years, 4 years. I know a lot of the tax credits and all of these funny financing vehicles run out in years 5 and 6 of the project. So we'll just have to see. We'll have to see if the investors can hang on that long, if the turbines themselves can hang on that long. Right now, there are numbers of turbines out in Ocotillo that are literally just leaking oil all over the ground with a federally protected water aquifer.
So they're polluting.
Literally polluting the desert with gallons and gallons of oil from these hydraulic leaks that we have yet to receive an explanation on.
Above the aquifer, which is the sole source of drinking water for the town of Ocotillo.
For that whole region. Right. Wow. There is no other source of water in that region, which is a shame because it is supposedly federally protected. So, you know, in closing, I have yet to see anything survive in that desert area, and I don't believe that these wind turbines will, and I don't believe there is the wind out there to justify them. So,
do you think anybody might be filing a new lawsuit over this, Bill? You're an attorney. I got to ask that question.
You know, it's hard to say, and until the right person comes forward with, you know, the information that I know that is out there that demonstrates that they don't have the data to support the science.
If anybody listening to this has data, if you've got some data from the federal government, if anybody has worked for Pattern Energy maybe and wants to come forward and be a whistleblower to tell us about what you know about this, what they knew about this, I guess that's really the million-dollar question is what did Pattern know and when did they know it? Did they have reason to know that this project was going to fail? Or did people in trusted positions of power in our government know? We'd also like to hear from whistleblowers inside any of the federal agencies who may be able to shed some light on this matter.
That's an interesting question. They would have to contact you.
There you go. editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We would love to hear from you. Bill, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you, Miriam.
Drought conditions have led to a significant increase in wildfire activity, and to ensure Californians are ready, Governor Jerry Brown has declared May 4th through 10th as Wildfire Awareness Week. CAL FIRE is reminding residents during Wildfire Awareness Week of the dangers posed by wildfires and the simple steps that should be followed to prepare for and prevent them. Fire season really never ended last year in many parts of California, said Chief Ken Pimlott, CAL FIRE director. We continue to have very dry conditions and experience unusually early fire behavior that is extreme for this time of year. According to the state's final snow survey on May 1st, the statewide snowpack water content is only 18% of normal. Between January 1st and May 1st, CAL FIRE has responded to over 1,200 wildfires that have charred nearly 2,700 acres. In an average year for the same time period, CAL FIRE would typically respond to about half as many fires, or less than 600. During Wildfire Awareness Week, CAL FIRE is reminding Californians that when it comes to wildfires, remember, ready, set, go. Being ready for a wildfire starts by maintaining a 100 feet of defensible space and hardening homes with fire-resistant building materials. With this year's drought, it is absolutely crucial that the residents be prepared for wildfires by ensuring that they have 100 feet of defensible space around their homes, said Chief Kimlott. Most wildfires are preventable, and we need residents and vacationers to be extra cautious outdoors because one less spark means one less wildfire. Homeowners looking for additional information on how to prepare themselves, their families, and their homes for wildfire can visit www.readyforwildfire.org. The site offers tips for residents to make their homes more resistant to wildfires and to ensure that their families are ready to evacuate early and safely when a wildfire strikes. Governor Brown has also called on all Californians to reduce their water use by 20% and prevent water waste. Visit saverh2o.org to find out how everyone can do their part, and visit drought.ca.gov to learn more about how California is dealing with the effects of the drought. This is Leon Thompson for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
Senator Marty Block, who represents San Diego's 39th State Senate District, has issued a statement expressing outrage after learning that the Rialto Unified School District assigned 8th grade students an essay debating the reality of the Holocaust. The students were asked to assess whether the Holocaust was an actual event in history or merely a political scheme created to influence public emotion and gain wealth. Senator Block fired back, "As chair of the California Legislative Jewish Caucus, it is abhorrent to me that students would be asked to question whether the Holocaust occurred. The assignment trivializes a painful and despicable episode in human history that is well documented. There are many issues open to robust debate that contest students' critical thinking skills. The reality of the Holocaust is not one of them. It is absolute historic fact," he said. "Holocaust denial is the province of white supremacists, virulent anti-Semites and neo-Nazis, not responsible historians. I was pleased to learn that the Rialto School District has canceled the assignment, but it is my hope that students, faculty, and administrators seize this opportunity to study the Holocaust and ponder its tremendous cost." Senator Block concluded that an important lesson is that we must all fight the intolerance and hate that led to the depraved crime that constituted the Holocaust. This is Miriam Raftery, the editor at East County Magazine, speaking. The Holocaust in Nazi Germany during World War II under the rule of Adolf Hitler led to the murder of 7 million Jews and many others, and that included my own great-grandparents. My father, when I was a child, told me of my grandparents' anguish when they learned the fate of their parents, as well as their brothers, sisters, and other relatives, nearly all of them, murdered in the concentration camps. Yes, we must raise our voices and all bear witness, because these are horrors that we must never, ever allow to be forgotten.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
President Barack Obama was greeted by protesters during his visit to the San Diego region on Thursday, and they came from his own Democratic base. Labor and community groups lined the streets outside a fundraiser featuring President Barack Obama to protest the pending Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, free trade agreement, a pact that they say threatens to ship California jobs overseas. The Democratic fundraiser was held at the home of Irwin Jacobs, founder of Qualcomm, a high-tech company that already does much of its production overseas and that has been lobbying for the TPP. Nicole Gachmanowski of Citizens Trade Campaign said in a press statement, "While the 1% is inside paying over $30,000 per couple for a photo op with the president, the Democratic Party's base is out in the streets protesting the president's job-killing trade proposal. California can't afford a NAFTA on steroids that ships more jobs overseas and further drives down wages and benefits in the jobs we have left," she said. The TPP is a trade pact currently under negotiation between the U.S. and 11 nations throughout the Pacific Rim, and it would set rules governing approximately 40% of the global economy. It includes countries like Vietnam and Malaysia, which market themselves as low-cost labor alternatives to China in an effort to attract manufacturing and service sector jobs. "Economic inequality is a major issue for voters," Gachmanowski stated. "If Democratic Party leaders think they can grant favors to big corporations at the expense of American jobs, they're going to have a hard time turning people out come November." More than three-quarters of House Democrats and a number of Republicans as well have already come out against allowing the TPP to be rushed through Congress, circumventing ordinary review, amendment, and debate procedures. The protesters also called on Representative Scott Peters and Susan Davis to stand up for California jobs by opposing Fast Track for the TPP as well. The demonstration included members of Citizens Trade Campaign, the Sierra Club, Women Occupy San Diego, and others. In addition to opposing the president's proposal for the TPP, they called on area members of Congress to oppose Fast Track legislation for it. Members of the group 350.org were also there to protest the Keystone Pipeline, which, if approved, would carry tar sands oil from Canada south through America's heartland to the Gulf Coast. A leading climate change expert has stated that mining tar sands would release such high levels of greenhouse gas emissions that it could push our planet past the tipping point toward irreversible climate change, a scenario that has been described as game over. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This week's Destination East County program features events to honor Mom for Mother's Day, such as Tea with the Queen, along with family activities, art, an Old West saloon, literature, and golf. In our preview, we have selected some film and theater and a patriotism event for next weekend. A Tea with the Queen Mother's Day event takes place on Saturday, May 10th at 12 p.m. Fusion Glass Company Gallery and Studio is offering a unique Mother's Day event for this fourth annual fun tea party. Guests can sip tea and nibble delicate treats while feasting their gaze on the new artworks in the gallery and speaking to the artists taking part in the current show. Guests can also create a mini artwork of their own. Guests will be able to listen to Bill from All Things Bright and British in La Mesa as he discourses on the many benefits of this wonderful ancient beverage, teaching guests when to drink the oolong as opposed to the lapsang souchong. Then tea drinkers can take their teacup to an intuitive tea leaf reader for a glimpse into their future. And the talented ladies from the San Diego Silk Guild will be there to show off some of the new wearable art they've created. Their silks will be on sale. Quick cosmetology makeovers and a vintage hat collection will help moms to prepare for a photo in the photo booth. RSVPs are suggested. The second annual Granite Hills Football Golf Tournament will be held on Saturday, May 10th at Cottonwood Golf Club in El Cajon. Rain or shine, check-in time is 11 a.m. with the shotgun start scramble at 12 noon. There will be a silent auction, goodie bags, and drawing prizes, along with a dinner at the end where awards for first, second, and third prize will be given out. Another Wild in the Country Gala will be held at Lions, Tigers, and Bears Big Animal Rescue in Alpine on Saturday, May 10th from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. Besides viewing the animals, the facility will have live and silent auctions, an opportunity raffle, live music, and fun for the whole family. Dinner will be provided during the event and is included in the ticket price. Hacienda Casablanca Mexican Restaurant and Cantina is having a champagne all-you-can-eat Mother's Day brunch on Sunday, May 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The restaurant offers an omelet station, many other breakfast traditions, soup bar, salad and fruit bar, hot lunch items, carving station, street tacos, homemade tortillas, and a dessert and pastry station. Celebrating literature in the city of La Mesa, the San Diego County Library is hosting Authors and Artists, a free and informative event from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 10th. Featured will be local authors and artists, book signings and sales, local artwork sales, and food trucks. There will be a special presentation by Richard Lederer, renowned wordsmith from public radio and the San Diego Union-Tribune, The Writing Life, a presentation on ebook publishing, writing your memoirs, as well as free art evaluations for those who bring a piece of their visual art. The event will be held at the La Mesa Civic Center behind the La Mesa Library. Visitors are also invited to celebrate the newly remodeled La Mesa Library at 10 a.m. in downtown El Cajon at Prescott Promenade, Friday night dinner and a concert season has begun, where spectators can enjoy great music and dancing every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m., with the exceptions of June 13th and July 4th, when the concerts will be held on Thursday, June 12th, and July 3rd with the Farmers Market. Visitors to downtown El Cajon can arrive early to dine at one of the many restaurants downtown, some with discounts for the evening, or bring their own picnic and lawn chairs. We have two Julian events in a row, and there will be another one coming up in our preview. Julian Women's Club will hold their annual wildflower show from May 7th through 10th in the historical town hall in Julian. Members of the Julian Women's Club gather wildflowers from all areas in and around Julian, including high mountain, desert, oak and pine forest, chaparral, and high desert. The Julian Arts Guild will host its annual spring show, Art Potpourri, this Mother's Day weekend, Friday, May 9th through Sunday, May 11th, at the Julian Town Hall on Main Street in Julian. The show will open each day at 10 a.m. and close at 6 p.m. The public is also invited to the artist's reception on Friday, May 9th at 6 p.m. Talented artists from Julian and nearby communities will present their paintings, photography, mosaics, ceramics, printmaking, jewelry, and other works of fine art. Admission to the Julian Arts Guild show is free, and many of the artists will be available to discuss their work. St. Madeline Sophie's Auxiliary presents Bunko Madness on Saturday, May 10th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Elks Lodge, number 1812, to benefit adults with developmental disabilities. A light lunch will be served, and guests can expect door prizes, a Chinese auction, and other prizes. Cottonwood Golf Club is hosting a Mother's Day brunch in the Pavilion and Spring Gardens on Sunday, May 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The brunch includes a carving station with tri-tip turkey and ham, chicken entrees and fresh fish, cheese enchiladas, a waffle station, and desserts. Acumba Hot Springs is the site of an historical walk on Saturday, May 10th at 10 a.m., hosted by the Acumba Boulevard Revitalization Alliance. Walkers can wear comfortable shoes and bring something to drink. Now for this week's Destination East County Preview, El Cajon Valley Lions Club is preparing for their fundraising event called Gunsmoke 4 on Saturday night, May 17th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the Ronald Reagan Community Center in El Cajon. It's a night of gambling and carousing in an Old West saloon. The Winchester Widows reenactors will be assisting the Lions. It's tea time again, and this occasion is the Alpine Women's Club Victorian Tea on May 17th, when they celebrate their 21st annual Alpine Women's Club Scholarship Fundraiser at the Historic Town Hall in Alpine. This year's entertainment will be Fashion Through Time, a show spanning a century of fashionable attire presented by members of the San Diego Costumers Guild. There will be two tea sittings, one at 11:30 and the other at 2:30 p.m. This event is open to the public, and Victorian dress is optional. The first annual Salvation Army East County Golf Tournament will be held at Cottonwood Golf Club on Wednesday, May 14th. This fundraiser to benefit the Salvation Army East County Food Bank is called Driving Ahead to Prevent Hunger. And it includes a check-in beginning at 10 a.m., a shotgun start at 12 noon, and a dinner and awards ceremony following the tournament. Julian Wild and Scenic Film Festival is now an annual event and will be held on Friday, May 16th at 6 p.m. at Julian High School. The festival presents a wide variety of international films that celebrate nature, the environment, and people who are making a difference. The festival includes a farm-to-table event Friday night, live music, awards party, and filmmaker Q&As. Proceeds benefit the Vulcan Mountain Foundation. Young Actors Theater presents a production of Bye Bye Birdie at the Encore Theater in Spring Valley. Character Conrad, the Elvis Presley type, has to say goodbye, and Kim McAfee from Sweet Apple, Ohio, is chosen to receive his kiss before he is inducted in the Army. Performances run from Friday, May 16th through May 24th. The San Diego Festival Chorus presents a Patriotic Spectacular on Sunday, May 18th at 3 p.m. at the College Avenue Baptist Church in San Diego. East County's San Diego Festival Chorus will be performing a concert to honor Memorial Day, our country, and its military veterans. The 90-voice, 48-piece symphony orchestra presents a program that includes a posting of the colors with musicians dressed in Civil War uniforms and anthems from the four branches of our military and more. Explore Mission Trails Day event is happening on Saturday, May 17th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. and is a way for children and families to discover all about the natural world. This is a free annual event with nature trail hikes, pony rides, dozens of discovery stations, along with other hands-on activities, crafts, and animal encounters. Also, at this time, the Visitor Center Art Gallery at Mission Trails has a solo artist, Dolwayne Green, photography exhibit going on for visitors. A new exhibit by the Colored Pencil Society of America, San Diego chapter, will be featured from May 24th through June 20th, 2014. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with a community enhancement grant from San Diego County. See you around, East County.
This is Ed Barena with a Crime Beat Report. The San Diego Sheriff's Department Santee Station is asking for the public's help in providing any information that would lead to the arrest of a suspect who threatened a man with a knife and robbed him in Lakeside. On Saturday, May 3rd at 9:22 p.m., the suspect approached the victim who was riding his bike home from a meeting in the unincorporated area of El Cajon on Los Coches Road near Interstate 8. The suspect ran up to the victim and brandished a knife with a 4-to-6-inch blade and demanded cash. The suspect left the area on foot northbound towards Lakeside. The suspect is described as a white male adult, blonde and gray shoulder-length hair with a stubble beard, 40 years old, 6 feet tall, weighs about 165 pounds, and possibly transient. He was wearing a brown jacket and dark pants. Anyone with information on this incident is asked to contact the San Diego Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous should call Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.